I'm told, I think, that we have Norman Otis Richmond, the man himself. Are you there, Norman?
Yes, sir. How are you today?
Good. It's great to be talking to you, and this is the day to be talking. You've written I want to tell you, Norman, it's a good, very good piece. That's my own subjective opinion.
Well, let me say that it's only so far it's only been printed in San Francisco in the Bayview. No one has printed it in Toronto. And
we'll try to be the first.
Okay.
This is Norman Otis Richmond, the bluesologist, and the title of the article is "Another Look at Martin Luther King Jr." As Norman says, you can find it right now. Even though you're in Toronto, just go on the internet to bayview.com. sfbayview.com.
Correct.
And it is a well thought out, I thought, very nice piece, because there's a tendency, that, and particularly from ruling circles in America, to turn Dr. Martin Luther King into one speech, one phrase, and everybody bows their head and then said, let's get back to watching football. Actually, his life was one heck of a life, and he was a deep thinker. And you, Brady, bring that out in your article. And I liked it so much. You began with a quote from a letter he wrote to his, at that time would be either his fiancée or Coretta, who later became his wife. Tell us about what he had to say there in that letter and what you're thinking about him generally.
Well, this letter was written to his, I guess, as we say in the southern part of the United States, he and Coretta Scott, who became Coretta Scott King, were courting at that particular time. This is in, the letter was written on July 18th, 1953. And the direct quote is, quote, "I imagine you already know that I am more socialistic in my economic theory than capitalistic."
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote that in on July 18, 1953.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. And we should remark, too, as your article brings out, this guy has always been underestimated in that area. People don't understand how well trained, how well educated, how in tune he was with advanced thoughts.
He was into Christianity. He was also deeply into Black history, but he knew a lot about. And I guess this is not a major criticism, but he also knew European thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Malcolm X did.
So to that degree, he was un-American, right?
Yes.
He read Germans and Frenchmen and things like that. The banned people.
Exactly right.
Well, you know, I always thought he was – when I learned a bit, I was quite struck by the fact that he was influenced and wrote – he took a one-year course on Hegel.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, preparing for to talk to you today – I was looking at the things he wrote about Hegel. That is, Hegel was a very deep thinker, but the author was pointing out that Hegel, in his thinking about human freedom, was one of the first in Europe to base his thoughts about going from being a slave or being an object into being a free person was slavery in Haiti, and that Hegel was inspired in his thinking by the success of the slave rebellion in Haiti.
I must admit that I'm unaware of that, but I'm not
surprised.
There is a guy by the name of Carlos Moore, and I don't want to give him too much publicity, but he wrote a little pamphlet called "Were Marx and Engels Racist?"
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he said yes. I think that's the title of the book. But you know, during that period of history, Europeans were most Europeans were
the so-called enlightened people, so-called enlightened, and they said freedom. They meant just for themselves. They did not mean it for Africans. In that sense, they wouldn't have been surprised by what allegedly was said by the president. Let's get to other. So he was. He told in 1953. He says he's socialistic, and then. But you bring up the thoughts of George Jackson, an American black revolutionary. And when I say that, we're talking about the 1960s when there were huge movements, and George Jackson was certainly at the forefront. And he.
Oh, the prison movement.
Yeah, and he made an assessment of Dr. King. Talk about that.
Well, George Jackson said that Dr. King put two and two together before Malcolm X. He said that, this is a direct quote, it is no coincidence that Malcolm X and ML King died when they did. Malcolm had just put it together, two and two. I seriously believe King knew all along, but was holding out and presenting the truth in such a way that it would affect the most people situationally without getting them damaged by gunfire. You remember what was on his lips when he died, Vietnam and economics, political economy. If what I said about MLK is true, and I'm going to put it down as if it were positive that it is, he was really on the side of the billions of righteous, and his image can be used. I mean, we can use, just claim him and use his last statement and his image to strengthen ours. And Malcolm also can be quote unquote reformed. It is easy with, I'll be easy with it. Slip it in like it's just common knowledge that King was a Maoist.
You know, that is so eloquently put. And that was in a letter written from prison.
To Angela Davis
as George Jackson. And
he wrote that letter on June 4th, 1970. He would live, I guess, maybe two or three months after that. Then he was killed.
This is the problem of, isn't this takes us to the slave master ish problem? I shouldn't say problem, but he said if Martin Luther King puts two and two together and he comes up with the right answer, it's dangerous.
Yep, that's right.
And he mentioned Vietnam, of course, and you'd point out later, actually tell us about that, Martin Luther King, when people talk about when he was assassinated, what was he doing in those, why was he there in Memphis?
Oh, he was there.
Wasn't to see over.
Sanitation workers and getting ready to, trying to organize a poor people's march in Washington. And it must be always remembered that at the time of Dr. King's death, he was public enemy number one. J. Edgar Hoover was going after him, and the press basically had talked about him as he was not the saint. The saint thing came later when they figured that they could co-opt him. Mm-hmm. But at the time of his death, Dr. King was public enemy number one to the ruling circles in the United States of America, because he was talking about the war in Vietnam, and he was talking about organizing poor people. He also made that great mountaintop speech. I've been to the mountaintop. And if you listen to that mountaintop speech, he was really talking about Africa, because he had gone to Africa in 1956. He went to Africa before Malcolm X. A lot of people don't realize that. He was invited to Africa. Let me get it straight. Satchmo, Louis Armstrong, went to Africa in 1956. Uh-huh. But King was at the independence of Ghana, which was March 6, 1957. Mm-hmm. Malcolm and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad didn't go to Africa till later. Mm-hmm. I think Malcolm went in 1959, but Dr. King had gone to Africa in 1957, which is, I'm just saying that that's just a historical fact now.
Well,
I'm not trying to get metaphysical.
But you're also pointing out this is a very special civil rights leader. He was called a civil rights leader. Americans thought of him as in Birmingham, and they thought of the issue as the South, and they were trying to frame the discussion. He jumps out of the frame and goes to Ghana. This is not, by the way people play these movements today, they all stay in their lane. They don't start moving over into other territory. He clearly, he did change lanes.
That the NAACP made it, the National Association of, for the Advancement of Colored People made a deal with the U.S. ruling class that black people in America had a long history of supporting other struggles, African and Asian struggles. Yes. But the NAACP made a deal that we would keep our mouths shut on the international front and
American exceptionalism.
Yeah, and that would be the deal. We won't talk about Africa. We won't talk about the revolution in China and the Cuban Revolution. We'll just keep it internal, and that basically set our movement back. Because
absolutely.
As far back as 1829, there was a guy by the name of David Walker, and he wrote an international appeal against the slave trade, and he called for the overthrow of slavery. That's in 1829.
Mm-hmm.
And you can read that document.
Yes. Well, you know, the great title, I thought, Martin Luther King's great title of a book was Why We Can't Wait.
Yes.
Because American history has always been, oh, yeah, that's bad. Please wait. Your call is important to us. Please stay on the line. And they basically, you can be there 100 years, and they say, oh, we hope you're still on the line because we want you to wait. And he said, no, waiting is over.
And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that many of King's books, if not all of King's books, were written in Jamaica. He spent a lot of time in Jamaica. At one time, Kingston, Jamaica, and Atlanta, Georgia were twin cities. And King spent a lot of time in the hills in Jamaica, and he wrote, like I say, why can't we wait? Why can't we wait? I'm certain he wrote that in when he was in Jamaica.
Yes, and people should understand, because we're back into the game of everybody says, oh, we should like the white liberals. You know, the white liberal position then and now is wait, and they always say, and to quote Bill Clinton, "I feel your pain." Except he doesn't do anything. And but you point, you made the point about Jamaica. He also visited the grave of Marcus Garvey and gave a speech there, and you quote Milton Blake. Tell us that story.
Milton Blake was my best friend, and he was a DJ and a human rights person in Toronto, Canada. He was born in St. Anne's Bay, the same place Bob Marley was from.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that he had broken his leg, and he was in the cast, and he heard Dr. King speak at over the radio, and he memorized that whole speech. And for years and years, he would come on the radio and quote that speech verbatim. He would quote that speech verbatim. He knew that speech right off the top of his head.
He was hosting Musical Triangle.
A Musical Triangle, and Adam Vaughn heard him speak one time. We had a tribute to something at the Blue Club Blue Note. Adam Vaughn heard him speak and brought him in, and he used to do a thing called the Commentary on the Black Experience. Then he got a radio show called, called the Musical Triangle. But before that, he had been with Chin and many stations. And he also was a TV personality in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Milton Seymour Blake. He was my best. He was my best man and my probably my closest friend.
Well, that was. So it's a very poignant part of your article. By the way, this article is in SF. Bayview.com, and you produce photographs. Are they with the article? I hope they are. I saw them today. It's Martin Luther King with Kwame Nkrumah.
Kwame Nkrumah with Ahmed Ben Bella. Kwame Nkrumah with Willie Mukasa Rickson. Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's four autographs in the Bayview article.
Yeah, you know. We have to so much appreciate I would call him a dialectical thinker, Martin Luther King was. He didn't pick fights with people. He made his point clear. He had the 60s, to put it mildly, were turbulent, turbulent, and a lot of bad blood around. But he just kept steadily moving in the right direction and handled everything around him beautifully.
He met with Elijah Muhammad for 5 hours. There's pictures of them together, but I mean, he was interested in a united front. He and Kwame Ture, I guess he saw Kwame Ture as, like, you know, like the young hothead, mm-hmm. but they were very close, extremely close. And
He respected people's grievances. He understood, and all he needed was that they respect his. He was managing a big piece of real estate politically. That all kinds of tendencies and forces were at work, and there were cities on fire. People got to remember it. There were all kind of, there was, you remember, there was Watts, and there was other, and he always got called upon. Anything happened, it was laid at his doorstep, and he may have no knowledge of what the events were about. He had to handle that.
Well, he met with Amiri Baraka, I guess, just before, during the time when Newark went up in 1967. There was a meeting between he and Amiri Baraka. Amiri Baraka writes about that and talks about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he was in contact with all sides of the movement, and we must point out the fact that he was denounced by the right wing of the civil rights movement because of his stance on Vietnam, and he basically said, you know, he's not interested in any grant, and in the grant, he's interested in justice. Mm-hmm. So he was really criticized by Roy Wilkins and Whitney Young and, mm-hmm. you know, that side of the civil rights movement because they thought he was going too far to the left, and he did not back off of that. He basically said he was on the side of what was right, and what was right was to be anti-Vietnam.
Yes.
And to be, it's like the whole thing about Barack Hussein Obama. You know, Barack Hussein Obama is the drone president. Dr. King would never have supported that. If you look, if King were alive today, you know that he would be opposed to what is taking place in Yemen, what is taking mm-hmm. place in the Middle East, what is taking place in Haiti. We know that for a fact. You know.
Well, can you paraphrase it, can you not, what he said on the Vietnam War, because he went into the issue. He says, my country is the source of more violence than others. Roughly, that's my thoughts. Can you, how about your paraphrase?
Well, he basically said that militarism was, American militarism was, basically, militarism was, and greed was the most biggest problem in the world today, not mm-hmm. socialism, communism, and the other stuff, but the fact that American militarism was the real problem in the world mm-hmm. then, and it's the problem in the world now.
Yeah, and you bring in Cornel West, and this will wind up here close shortly, but Cornel West's book about him, or essay, basically used an expression which I think we know also would apply to the Mandela memory. They want to take the sting out of both these men and turn them into our pal instead of describing them correctly.
That's the whole co-option thing. I think Amiri Baraka talked about that. He quoted Lenin about how they, when someone dies, they basically turn them inside out and make them an icon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they have done to King. They took the sting out of him and froze him in I Have a Dream and Little White Boys and Little White Girls and Lovey-Dovey, you know, Can mm-hmm. We All Just Get Along? And they basically, that's how they that's what they bring. They give you, a holiday. They give us a holiday. And they make him, King for a day,
yeah.
January 15th. And,
which coincides with Blue Monday, I guess. They say the saddest day of the year, they're telling us right now.
Blue Monday.
They say this time of year. Whoever chose this date was, I think it was like a practical joke on the memory of Dr. King.
Uh-huh.
Because it's, how do you get out in the streets, which is where everybody belongs, but, you know, you have Sub-Zero, et cetera. there was a heck of a fight over this. I liked the fight personally. I liked it when all the bigots came out and said, we think he's a communist and we don't want to have a Martin Luther King Day. Well, okay. Let's argue about that. Don't turn him into a liberal in order to have the day. That isn't worth it.
Yep.
This has been Norman Otis Richmond, the bluesologist, and has written a terrific article, Another Look at Martin Luther King Jr., and that's sfbayview.com. And it's a terrific article, Norman. Thank you very, very much for being with us.
Thank you for your support, and anytime I'll come on to
Great.
The report. Thank
we,
you very
we
much.
We always look forward to it. Thank you, Norm.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And I'll remind you, 6:30, there's going to be a talk about Martin's Day and the two founders in Toronto of Martin's Day, Hugh Extivore and Charles Roach, and their daughters, Erica Extivore and Sunset Roach, are going to talk at 6:30, 777 Bathurst. I think we might have a little Duke Ellington, and then when we come back, we'll talk to Steve Gowans.